Anyway, we were going over coalescence, and I'm going to have to just spend 2 more minutes on coalescence. I really should have spent another lecture. So it was bad planning on my part. The main point is that if you're trying to make inferences about parameters, the product of population size and mutation rate, which is usually given as 4n mu, 4n g, where g is a growth rate, 4n r, where r is a recombination per base along the genome, 4n m, where m is a migration rate. You don't do it. Lots of people do it this way. They make a rough estimate of the coalescent. Usually there aren't a heck of a lot of sites available to do that because you're dealing with a restricted part of the genome. They look at that tree and then they say, this is the true tree, we will treat it as the true tree, we will believe in it implicitly. You thereby get rid of all the uncertainty about it. And then they'll say, given that tree, what's our best estimate? And there are ways to do that. Bad idea. What you want to do is say, look, and here is the really important point. The objective is not to estimate the tree, because every little genome has a different one, and we really, in some sense, do not care whether Freddie Field Vole and Frieda Field Vole are 83rd cousins or 62nd cousins. We don't care. What we do care is what the parameters that generate those trees and the genetic data on the tree are. So we care about mutation rates, migration rates, recombination rates, population growth rates, or histories of population growth. And the thing you want to do is average over your uncertainty about the tree. And I was showing you a simple two-species case. There's a corresponding discussion in the book where the only uncertainty is, topology is always the same, only uncertainty is how deep was this split here in the coalescent tree. Without going over the detailed argument, we're out of time. The way to do it turns out to be using the equation I gave you earlier, where you sum over all possible trees. Here it corresponds to integrating. For each possible value of your parameter, there is a Kingman prior, and you integrate the product of that and that, and that becomes a single number, which is a function of the parameter value here, and you get a likelihood curve in the parameter value, not the divergence time, because you've averaged over all possible divergence times. The larger objective, the larger task with more tips, is you averaging over all tree topologies and overall coalescent branching times. That can be done by Markov chain Monte Carlo. Would you flip forward, please? One more. Thank you. There are a bunch of people who have done that. Mary Kuhner was just in the room a moment ago with John Yamato. Slightly earlier papers by Bob Griffiths and Simon Taveray. Now, I'm going to have to skip over a whole bunch of slides, but let's go forward, 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 just to give you a visual, and you can get a curve of the log likelihood against theta. This is done with one of Mary and John's programs, Lamarck, with 50 sequences of 500 bases. It's averaging over your uncertainty about the coalescent tree. And that's the theoretically most efficient way of doing it, and theoretically correct. People are using other less powerful methods now called approximate Bayesian computation that involve simulating trees and involve reducing the data to some summary statistics that may not have all the power in the data. But this is the sort of optimal way of doing it. So even though you have a vast space of possible tree topologies and divergence times, one can, by Markov chain Monte Carlo sampling, sample the relevant areas of that and get values for you get either likelihood curves for the parameters you want, or if you put priors on those parameters, there's a way of doing it that will get you Bayesian posteriors on those parameters. That's the all I'm going to say. There, oh, four and one more, sorry. Yeah, there's a bunch of programmed Lamarck, Beast, GeneTree's not much used, but Migrate and IM or IMA that are of that family and are used for this. But there's a bunch of others that do approximate Bayesian computation. In the time that remains, I want to just talk about one more topic, and that's consensus trees, which is unrelated, pretty much unrelated. So again, if you could push. Consensus trees are trees that are intended to express the agreement among a bunch of trees. It's not posed generally as a statistical problem, and it's not easy to pose it as a statistical problem. So there's an element of arbitrariness in any consensus tree methods. The principles of statistics are not picking out one of these methods over another. So here are three rooted trees with seven species each. If you look at them closely, you'll see that the two right ones are actually identical. The left one's a bit different. And if you say to yourself, well, what structure is there that these trees tend to agree on? The word tend to is dubious. Okay. Could you go forward one, please? I'm sorry to keep insisting, but okay. Well, if you look on these trees, you'll see that they all have this clade, this little group of AC, and it's all present on all three trees. So we can say certainly they agree on the presence of AC. Okay, forward one, please. Here's another clade, B, D, E, F, is on all three of those. But you may realize that the structure within it isn't quite. So if I go forward one more, please. Here's another one, but there's a question about it. A through F are there on all the trees. But if you look at it and say to yourself, well, are we thinking of these as rooted trees or unrooted? At the moment, I'm presenting them to you as rooted trees. If they're rooted trees, fine. This is a legitimate statement that there is a common ancestor of those six species. But if these are unrooted trees, and we just happen to have shown them rooted, then all this is saying is that there is a partition separating A through F and G. Well, think of it. Any tree on which G sits at the end of its own branch will have that. And generally speaking, every species is sitting at the end of its own branch, with some exceptions when you happen to have trees where some of the species are somehow inferred to be at an ancestral node, which is unlikely. And if you see G sitting at the end of its branch, that's all that this is saying. And that's in all trees. In fact, it's in any tree you might draw. So we generally don't spend time worrying about whether B is at the end of its own branch, because it always is. So this is then a somewhat vacuous statement if these are unrooted trees, but if they're rooted trees, it's not. Well, one of the kinds of consensus tree that was invented earliest, it was really the earliest one, is strict consensus. It simply says, we want to see all the structure that's there in every tree. So, forward please. Yes, I'm sorry, we're not quite there yet. BDE is on this tree and that tree, but there's a group that is not on this tree. These three are near each other, but there's F. There is no partition separating BED from everybody. There is no common ancestor of BED that's not also the ancestor of F. So this is a case of here is a clear signal of some conflict between the trees. Okay, forward to the next one. If you do the strict consensus tree, what you get out, you simply take those partitions that show up all the time. Now, you'll recall the majority rule consensus tree. There, you had a tree, and you labeled each interior branch according to whether that partition, if it's an unrooted tree or if it's a rooted tree, you're labeling a clade, whether it's there all the, what fraction of the time it's there. Well, these would be the ones that are there 100% of the time. If you look at a majority rule consensus tree and simply collapse all the interior nodes that are there, the interior branches that are there less than 100% of the time, you get this. You do see AC there. You do see BDEF there. Within this, there is no structure that's there all the time. Now, people were very happy and proud with strict consensus trees for a while, but they're pretty much requiring absolute agreement in every case, and that is too strict for the uses one wants to put them to in general. Let's go forward one more. Thank you. There is a problem with strict consensus trees, and here it is. Here's a tree. Here are two trees that are almost the same. B, C, D, E, F, G are connected to each other in exactly the same way on these two trees. All that's different is I've pulled A off and pasted it on next to G. So A has moved from one side to the other. Everything else stays the same. If you, can we push again? If you make the strict consensus tree, that is the strict consensus. There simply is no resolution. There is no group, no clade you can make in that tree that agrees between those two trees. And so strict consensus of those two is completely unresolved. You've lost the fact that B through G did in fact, if you were to erase A from the data, B through G would show complete agreement and a lot of structure. So strict consensus is a little too strict for most uses. So forward again. Maybe you and Aaron could split the, maybe he could push the button the rest of the time or something. I'm feeling guilty. You've heard about majority rule consensus trees. And I won't go over again how those are done, but those are done in general by accumulating from each tree all the partitions on it and making a table of partitions and then counting how many times each occurs and then taking the partitions that occur more than half the time and saying, okay, those will all fit on the same tree. Let's make that tree. There are these extended majority rule consensus trees, which I put in consens. How often they're used, I don't know, but basically they say, start with your majority rule consensus tree. If that has some unresolved areas, go down your list of partitions in order of frequency and pick the first one that is still compatible with that tree. They won't all be. And put it in and then keep going and keep doing that until you resolve everything. There's no strong argument that that's a great way to do things. So the strict consensus tree on these three trees has 2/3 of the trees have this branch and this branch. All these three branches are present 100% of the time. Of course, as I mentioned, if it's an unrooted tree, well, that one's got to be there 100% of the time, so that's then not a very interesting statement. So you get some more structure. They are a reasonably widely used kind of consensus tree, but they're not the only possible kind of non-strict consensus tree. So on the next slide, thank you. There's a guy named Ed Adams who suggested in a couple of papers that we look at triples on the tree. Now, if you have a rooted tree, a triple of species is the, we have erasers, but not, well, I'll describe it with my hands. A triple on the tree is the smallest rooted tree that has different alternative topologies. If there's only two of them, it's always the same. With three, they're different. And you can ask which one of those three came, which one of those three do you see? So what Adam suggested was take all rooted triples on each tree. So that's all sets of three species, basically. Retain those that are not contradicted in any of the trees. So it's going to be like a strict consensus with respect to the triple, in that you'll want to keep a triple only if it either shows up in every tree or is unresolved. So it could be unresolved in some of the trees, but it can't be resolved in one of the alternative ways. It has to have that triple. Collect together this set of uncontradicted triples and make a tree, and you apparently always can. So let me show you the Adams consensus tree on the next slide. There we go. So what we see is, let's see, this is the, these are the original trees. The green set of branches here shows you the set ABC, and when it's a tree, on this tree, A and C are sibling species, B is splitting off earlier. Over here, again, A and C sibling species for the green one. So that triple, ABC, is found in all trees. As I say, to get onto an Adams tree, you could also be have it be a three-way unresolved split in some of the trees. The red triple, the red subtree, for BDF shows D and F as sibling species, but over here B and D are sibling species, and over here again B and D. So although there's a little more backing for BD, it's not absolute. It's not absolutely uncontradicted. So that red one will not get onto the resolve, onto the Adams consensus tree. So we go forward one panel. And here is the Adams consensus tree for the rooted trees that I showed you, the three rooted trees. And they show this structure over here just fine. Recall that it was all on all the trees. They show E and D being sibling species, but this split here is unresolved because it's sometimes contradicted in some of the triples. So it's another way of getting, in this case, you don't get complete resolution when there are trees disagreeing with each other, but it's a way of displaying a not strict, not complete strict consensus. It's still fairly strict. You might think, okay, you've been talking about triples of rooted trees. Can you do the same thing? Can't you do the same thing for unrooted trees? And you might think, okay, what we want to do, well, it's pretty obvious. You take the unrooted trees, and then in an unrooted tree, a triple isn't interesting because it will be simply three lines coming together at a single point, unrooted. It's always the same, has no alternative topology. Well, let's look at quadruples, quartets. So we take four tuples of species, then you can find that with unrooted trees, of course, there were three possible resolutions of a tree of four tips. So we say, okay, we'll take quartets. We'll make one corresponding to Adams. We'll look at uncontradicted quartets, and then we'll assemble them into a tree. So surely we have an unrooted Adams tree that we can make that way. Actually not. There's a horrifying theorem, let me see the next panel, by Mike Steele, who's been a major contributor to to tree methods of all sorts. Andreas Dress, a German applied mathematician, who's he gets his fingers into everything. He's tremendously, he's a guy who's interested in nearly everything, except statistics. He doesn't like to think about statistics. And Andreas, if you go into almost any field of applied science and you say, is there a guy in northern Germany who works in your area and does interesting mathematical stuff? They will say, yeah, there's a guy named Andreas Dress. He did the following. This is trees is not his only specialty. Anyway, Mike Steele and Andreas Dress and the student got together and they proved the following, which is just horrifying. They said, look, let's make an unrooted Adams-like consensus tree based on quartets. Now, we're going to break three requirements. And to me, these three requirements are inevitable. You can't possibly have a method that is really sensible that doesn't follow. One is that the results should not be altered by relabeling all the species in a consistent way. In other words, you just give them different names, but do it consistently. Surely that should still, the set of trees should still, should still come out. The consensus tree should still come out the same. Second, the results should not depend on the order in which the trees are input. Doesn't matter which tree you call is the first one you look at, the second, the third. You just have a set of trees. You're considering them in any order. That should still give you the same consensus tree. These two requirements are met by all the consensus tree methods that I showed you already. And finally, if a quartet appears in all trees, it should appear in the consensus. Pretty obvious, okay, for a quartet. They then show, by some counterexamples, that there isn't any unrooted consensus tree method that possibly can satisfy all these, which is just depressing. I mean, it would be nice to have an Adams-like unrooted consensus tree method, but they have proven that we won't ever have one unless we violate these terribly reasonable requirements. So we're stuck. So that is a disproof. Yes, I have a couple more things to mention to you. So if we could go forward one more. I want to mention just two other topics that are connected to consensus trees, and then maybe there'll be time for a few questions at the end. One is slightly different problem, which is a consensus subtree. Here are three trees. Now you'll notice they don't have the same number of tips on them. This one has only five. And so if somebody comes forward and says, is there a tree on a subset of these species that is found in all of these trees? So it's like strict consensus, but it's only for a subset of species. So if you look here, you'll see, well, over on this one, species C isn't there at all. So whatever it is, it's not going to be on species C. If you look here, you'll see, also species G is not on every, it's only on this tree. So G and C are going to be eliminated. Then you find some disagreement. If you go forward one, please. Here are subtrees, trees you get when you strip out some species from each, that are in agreement, that A is near F, that B and D are sisters, at least in the rooted tree. And so, forward one, please. This is the consensus subtree of those trees. So that's another interesting thing to find. You might have data that is rather noisy. It has many different species. Some studies of this group have a lot of species, some have few. And you say, well, look, I just want to find the tree of a subset of species that is agreed upon by all these. That's what this is. One can go further and talk about less strict consensuses for the consensus subtree problem. And then there's one other problem, and this will be the last projections we'll use. Go forward, please. There is the supertree problem, and that's a corresponding problem, but it's different. It's saying, I have a bunch of studies, each of which deals with a subset of our species. And there may be some species that are not, there may be some species that don't occur in all those trees. But what I want to do is say, well, each of them is suggesting partial structure for a tree. Is there a tree that is consistent with all of these, in the sense that if I take C, A, B, D, and I go C, A, B, D, I find, and I just erase F and B, I find this tree. If I erase C, E, and F, I find, let's see, there's six. I have to erase, sorry, I'm just, I know E is not there, that's it. C, if I erase just C and F, I get this one. If I erase, who am I erasing? A, B, C, D, and G. Yeah, D and G, I get that one. And there is the tree. So it's, there's a computational task of how do we overlay these things on each other. Now, I'm not going to give you a simple method of how you do it because I don't even remember how to do it. But there is a whole literature of super trees in which you take trees on, you know, you want to take a bunch of trees on reptiles, for well, bad example, not a clade, a bunch of trees on mammals, but they don't all have the same set of tips. And you try to say, is there among those a tree that is uniformly a group? Sorry, they don't all agree with each other. Is there a bigger tree that all of them are consistent with? And there's various suggestions of what to do if you don't have this complete agreement. If you have partial agreement, there's various suggestions, none of which I remember offhand. So that's just a quick tour of consensus tree methods. There are also methods like tree distance methods, numbers indicating how far apart from each other trees are. All of those, like the consensus tree methods, have an element of arbitrariness. Very little has been done that puts them in a statistical context and says there's some statistical model involved. So I'm going to stop there, and if there are immediate questions, I think on Fridays we don't have a class charging in and evicting us, so there would be a couple minutes for this. Yes, thank you for asking a question.
Oh, so would it be okay to like show like the best tree and then show the support from all that, say, bootstrap work?
You mean to take the different trees that we have and sort of rank them by how much support there is to them?
Like the most likely tree, I guess.
Well, of course, you know, you can either in a Bayesian context or in a likelihood context, you can get the maximum likelihood tree. In a Bayesian context, you can get the maximum posterior probability tree, which is to say, among the distribution of trees that come out of Bayesian methods, in theory, if you were to have a huge run, it would be the one that occurred most frequently. Or the, you know, the posterior sort of the density function would be the one at the highest point. Those are single trees, but they don't really raise the consensus tree or super tree or subtree problem.
Well, I guess I was just wondering if, since there is that problem, could we just not show the consensus tree, but just show the best tree, but then show the support on that best tree from, let's say, all the bootstrap or...
Well, yeah, and people do. People will do a bootstrap run, let's say, or look at a cloud of trees that are in a Bayesian posterior, sample from a Bayesian posterior, and then take the maximum likelihood tree or the maximum a posterior probability tree and indicate on it what the bootstrap support or what the Bayesian credibility values are on those branches. Once in a while, you might find that the majority rule consensus tree is a little different from the maximum likelihood tree. Usually that'll be for splits that are not very well supported. So you have to sort of watch out for that. There is an argument to be made that majority rule consensus trees, for example, are another way of estimating the tree. They may even be a better estimate than the single maximum likelihood tree. So you could argue either way as to which single tree was best to present. But you can do that. Please.
So earlier when you were talking about these consensus trees with unrooted and rooted, like earlier in the homeworks using your program, it had the option to say, is this tree rooted? And then it was like, no, but use outgroup as. So it's basically finding a solution to make the consensus tree readable in that sense by rooting it by the outgroup, so you're not actually having like an unrooted tree in that sense of that.
In the consensus tree programs such as mine, in which you choose an anchor to make it look like a rooted tree, that's generally done after the unrooted consensus is obtained, which means that the shape of it as unrooted won't change. It'll just be what making the diagram rooted on that branch. Fortunately, it's true for all the methods except maybe the Adams one, that putting a different root does not change the strict consensus, it doesn't change the majority rule consensus, it might change atoms. But for most of the methods people use, the rooting that you supply does not change the outcome of the consensus tree calculation, except in terms of how the tree is displayed. I think that was the question.
Yeah,
I get a little
clarified whatever I was trying to ask. Okay.
Anything else? Yes.
So if you have a big data set, like 100 species, can you randomly sample like 10 species, but you have a 20 of such sample? So you can build like subtree, then build a super tree afterwards.
Yeah, now that's a very interesting computational strategy.
That will save computation time?
It will certainly. What basically we're saying is, if you want to make the tree of vertebrates, do you need all the vertebrates, or can you use representatives for some of the groups? And is it possible to pick a sort of like, out of all vertebrates, 20 species at a time in some sampling strategy, estimate trees for those, and then use super tree methods to put together the bigger tree? And that is a very legitimate strategy. And a recent seminar speaker in our department, Tandy Warnow, has specialized in that, in looking at trying to build big trees from criteria like likelihood by estimating subtrees of them, but doing enough of them that then you can paste them together. And I think it's a valid strategy. There are people who say, no, you should never drop any of the species because a change in the sparrows could ripple through the tree and change the fish, although that is very rare for that to happen. So I would argue, I'd be on Tandy's side on this and say, it's probably a good computational strategy. However, programs for things like likelihood and Bayesian have been getting faster. And so the need to do that is probably not as great as it used to be. But I'd say, when you're dealing with really big trees, making good estimates of subtrees is, and then putting them, stitching them together is a pretty good computational strategy. Well, I think I should release you all. The exam is in here at 2:30 on Wednesday. The review session is at 3 o'clock on Tuesday, also here. So we'll see you there. And I posted, as you know, the 2008 exam. You can take a look at that and get an idea of what level of obsession I require from you. Okay.